Welcome to Nightlife, the podcast.
A new film that's just opened around the country, Operation Mincemeat, certainly caught our eye. It's focused on the true wartime story of an Allied ruse, a diversionary con played out on the German high command in the middle of World War II. It involved the corpse of a homeless man who'd eaten rat poison, dressed up in a British major's uniform, who then had a briefcase chained to his wrist full of fake documents. His body was then dumped by the British by a submarine off the Spanish coast. The aim was to trick the Nazis into thinking that Allied forces were planning to attack southern Europe by way of Greece rather than Sicily. Here's a taste of the movie.
In 5 weeks, 100,000 British forces will strike Sicily's southern shore.
Unfortunately, the Nazis know of our intentions. So we're going to play a humiliating trick on Hitler.
We have to convince Germany that our target is Greece.
The plan begins in Spain, where a corpse will wash up on shore bearing classified letters.
A corpse carrying fake documents. I may vomit.
I may vomit with you.
Those are, of course, the dulcet tones, you would recognise them, of Colin Firth, also Matthew McFadden. It's directed by John Madden of the Best Exotic Marigold Hotel and Shakespeare in Love fame. And John is joining us tonight from the UK. Hi, John. Welcome to Nightlife.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Well, this is a very appealing to fans of war movies. And when you look on the face of it, it seems almost too fantastical to be based on real events. How close to the truth is it?
It's pretty close. I mean, you did an admirable job of summing up the story there. You made it sound as if it all went absolutely swimmingly. In fact, it was an incredibly meticulously planned idea that was on the face of it, you know, almost absurd, and actually sounded that way from your description, which is accurate in terms of, you know, a brief look at it. But it was really, really carefully worked out so that should the Germans suspect it was a hoax in some way, the fiction that they created about Major Martin, that was the identity they gave the body, could be validated at every turn, so much so that it gave the creators of the plan, Ewan Montague and Charles Chumley, played by Colin Firth and Matthew McFadden, the illusion that it should work because everything was eventuality was covered. But of course, it turned out when once they launched the body into the Mediterranean off the coast of Huelva in southern Spain, that actually they lost control completely of what would happen thereafter. They hoped they planned everything, but in fact they met a number of obstacles and left them in the position of not really knowing whether or not the idea was going to work. And if the Germans had suspected that this was a piece of disinformation, it ran the risk, obviously, of exposing an invasion force of 100,000 people, you know, Canadian, American, and British, to, you know, a potential massacre. So it's a very high stakes story and an extraordinary, you know, evolution of a very odd idea.
Yeah, and is the idea that no one was really certain whether the Germans had bought it until, you know, the operation was launched in Sicily and the Allied forces realised that the resistance was light? Was that the only moment that they really knew for sure that Hitler had swallowed it?
Yes, that's absolutely right. I mean, there were, you know, the Allies, of course, had an advantage, which is that the Enigma code had been cracked and therefore they were monitoring encrypted information that appeared, for example, to indicate that, in fact, the troop movements had begun away from Sicily being transferred to Greece, which was central to the deception they were trying to pull off. But equally, it was perfectly possible in that circumstance that they were sending out information that was actually disinformation in the possibility that it might be decoded by the Allies. So the last exchange that you hear, which is actually the trailer of the film, where you hear Chumley say, I may vomit, and Ewan Montague, Colin Firth replying, I may vomit with you, it is really a moment of existential dread that it may be the biggest bluff the other side have pulled against them. This is the problem you get into with disinformation when you're trading false narratives and so on, that actually the same trick can be played against you, and you end up in a world where you know the lack of certainty and the lack of reassurance is terrifying. It's an interesting film because it starts in one place and starts with something that I suppose feels kind of slightly more lighthearted and playful as they begin to construct the fiction of this character and so on. But gradually they become more immersed in it and finally get lost in their own fiction, meticulous though it was, and you know, as likely a chance of it working as there was, still there is this gaping hole that they might have got the whole thing wrong,
and gradually the film develops. Consequences of that, yeah.
So, exactly.
Now, John, this isn't the first film to actually be made about this story. There was The Man Who Never Was from 1956, which was based on the book from 1953 of the same name. That was written by Ewan Montague. Did that influence the way you approached making this film?
Well, not really, because there's a sort of specific difference, which is that the Ewan Montague's account of the operation was something he campaigned, to be able to write, and the intelligence community were not in favor of that happening for a long time, and when they did finally allow it, they insisted on vetting the entire thing. And it had one gaping piece of misinformation right in the middle of it, which is that they had actually identified the body and the body they were hoping to use was somebody who was still alive in hospital, but in a vegetative state. And Montague had to go and sue and make his case to the boy's father that they wanted to use the body for these purposes. This was all a pack of lies, complete fiction, because actually they simply stole a body that fitted the specifications needed to make it look like a drowning. And in 1996, all of the files of that era, and Operation Mincemeat in particular, were declassified, and an enormous volume of material suddenly came to light. And Ben McIntyre, who wrote the book on which the film is based, had a range of material available to him that was never available originally. So it is the same story for sure, but it couldn't really classify as a remake of that film because it was made on a totally different basis. And although it's actually a very good film in its own right, and of the time was very much about cheering the British on and how they've managed to pull off this extraordinary coup. And I think ours is perhaps consonant with the times, a more complex and ambiguous journey, in terms of what we're showing.
John Madden is with me on Nightlife, a film director. He's the director of Operation Mincemeat, which is just opening in Australian cinemas. So who actually came up with the idea of using the corpse as part of this deception?
Well, there was in currency at the time an extraordinary document called the Trout Memo, which was, really an ad hoc sort of dossier of various ideas for pulling the wool over the enemy's eyes in some form or another, just ideas about spreading disinformation and throwing the enemy off the scent. And this was compiled, strangely enough, by Ian Fleming, who was a lieutenant commander in the Wavy Navy That's to say, behind the lines, not in active service. And he was in naval intelligence, which is run by Admiral Godfrey, who's a character in the film as well. They had jointly produced this document. And number 28 in this extraordinary dossier, known as the Trout Memo, the idea being that you throw a line and you haul in the fish, which is supposedly the unsuspecting German recipient of the disinformation. And that was based on something called the Haversack ruse about, you know, a body being discovered with papers, with apparently secret papers. That turned out to be false, of course. And this was it was a well-known kind of motif from fiction of the time, detective fiction in particular. And they Fleming had stolen this plot from a novel by Basil Thompson, who was quite a popular novelist of detective and police fiction at the time, which was known. This was, you know, not without precedent. It was known as the Haversack ruse, after the satchel in which the papers were found. So that's where the idea came from, as they were looking around in the 20 Committee, which is the heart of British intelligence, wartime intelligence, at the time, for an idea or some way of persuading the Germans that they were not, the Allies were not going to invade Europe, it's Sicily, the obvious location geographically and topographically, shallow beaches, a huge southern coastline, and Italy was definitely the most vulnerable part of the Axis. So this is the idea that came to the fore and was prosecuted particularly by Ewan Montague and Charles Chumley. There was a certain amount of resistance to it initially, because if it went wrong, it would go catastrophically wrong, meaning that the Germans would know categorically that Allies were going to land in Sicily. So the presence of Ian Fleming in the middle of this story did go on to write the definitive oeuvre of a certain kind of espionage of the time and later is an extraordinary kind of factor in this story and one that obviously we develop.
Yeah, he didn't appear that much. I wonder if you were tempted, you know, to actually make the character of Ian Fleming a little bit bigger, given that, you know, of course, he then went on to write James Bond.
Well, we felt an obligation, given the fact that, that such an extraordinary amount of research had been done and that the families of the Montague family and the Chumley family, who were, very much involved, not on a day-by-day basis, but obviously, we wanted to not distort things. And while Fleming was critical at the beginning of it, and indeed he moves in and out of the story, as you know, I don't want to give too much away to say that actually we did develop an idea that totally related to that, because the film really is at one level about storytelling and about what storytelling means and the relationship between those who create the fiction and those who are on the receiving end of it. Fleming does play a central role, but a kind of a framing role, if I can put it that way, without giving away too many spoilers. Part of the actual team, but he was watching over it, as it were.
Yeah. There is a scene where he's sort of wandering around in a basement, and there is a character who, if you were watching a Bond film, would be Q demonstrating the gadgets. Was he a real player in Operation Mincemeat, this Q-like figure, or did you pop that one
yes,
in there?
Yes. I mean, one of the things that's absolutely true is that the character of M in the Bond novels, i.e. the kind of controller and so forth, is actually based on John Godfrey, Admiral John Godfrey, who was the head of naval intelligence at that time and Fleming's superior. And there was a man called Charles Fraser Smith who had this sort of domain of his own in a rather obscure place where he was developing all sorts of gadgets, really, cork screws that work backwards and all sort of semi-pointless things. Extremely eccentric fellow. And that area that he operated in was known as Q Branch. And And indeed, that character is the basis for the character Q in the books. I think, you know, we didn't want to, sort of sprinkle the movie with all kinds of Bond references. We limited ourselves to a couple of things that were quite relevant, because that Charles Fraser Smith, for example, was responsible for manufacturing the cylinder with its, preservative properties that allowed the body to be kept, as it were, fresh, so it could look like a recent drowning in April 1943 when they launched the body on a particular day with particular tide patterns and wind patterns and so forth. He was a very significant contributor to how the whole thing unfolded. It's kind of extraordinary, really, when you think that all these characters then sailed into an extraordinary fictional universe that happened 10 years later and is still dominating our ideas of espionage now.
Yeah, exactly. So John Madden is with me, film director. He's the director of Operation Mincemeat, and we're just hearing some of the story behind it. Colin Firth and Matthew McFadden, were they excited to be part of this film?
I think they were. You know, I think it's one of those stories, you've pointed out how extraordinary the story is, really, and how unlikely I think it is that it might have worked. I think actually we should sort of not dwell too much on whether it did work or it didn't work, because it's one of the interesting things about the film that you get to the end of it and you have no idea really whether it is going to work. It's a very intriguing script in character terms, I think your greatest sort of bait, I suppose, when you're looking to cast an actor is to see whether they respond to what they see in front of them on the page. And that relationship is rather an extraordinary one. There's an emotional dimension to both characters that you wouldn't expect in this kind of film, perhaps. It might just be a procedural piece about espionage, and it's a much more human story than that. And so, yes, I think neither of them had worked with one another, although, as been pointed out repeatedly, both of them have played Darcy in different iterations of Pride and Prejudice, though they obviously knew each other's work. And they're both, really, I don't want to take credit for saying they're both well cast. I'm just saying they belong in each of their roles so completely. And yes, we had a very good time making the film. Yeah. And a studious, industrious time as well as an enjoyable time.
Now, if we just pop back to Ian Fleming for a moment, because he was one of the characters who was sort of busy writing a book or would go on to write a book soon afterwards. But in fact, I think it's a Colin Firth's character who at one point says something like, is there anybody in this office who isn't writing a book? Because there were sort of espionage novelists everywhere. Was that really going on?
That was true. You've got to remember that we tend to think of spies now being people who, in full employment of espionage. During the war, that wasn't the case. It was much more of an ad hoc arrangement where, people were recruited from, in age ranges that didn't allow them to be part of the war effort in the front line. So in the case of Montague, he was too old to serve. In the case of Cholmondeley, he was in the right age range, but hampered by large feet and fallible eyesight, because he was he'd actually joined the RAF and wanted to be a fighter pilot, but was disqualified on the count. So they both had extraordinarily agile brains, and they ended up gravitating towards intelligence, and so. As it turned out, that the vast majority of people in the 20 Committee, which, by the way, was called the 20 Committee because they had two X's on the door of the office that they met in, which, of course, stood for double cross, as well as by the Roman numerals, two X's, which amounts to 20. That's why they were called the 20 Committee. And it's a little window into how playful and sort of crossword puzzle obsessive many of these people were. And many of them were actually novelists and writers of detective fiction, sometimes under pseudonyms. one of the key characters when they moved to Spain, whose name actually we changed for various reasons, also was a well-published novelist. And so Cholmondeley, who is and Ewan Montagu, of course, went on to become a novelist, as it were, writing the account of the story itself. But Cholmondeley, in our version of the story, is incredibly irritated by this, that everybody is writing documents everywhere, and he's not a man who thinks in terms of fiction, but in terms of meticulously, collated fact, and was obsessed with the secrecy of the whole thing.
Yeah, John Madden is here, film director. He's the director of Operation Mincemeat. Just wanted to ask you finally about Operation Market Garden later in the war. That was the Allied invasion of Holland in September 1944. A genuine British staff officer brought a complete corps-level operations order with maps and graphics, which was never supposed to leave Britain, with him on this transport glider. It ended up in German hands. How did what had happened during Operation Mincemeat colour their reaction to having these, you know, papers delivered to them?
You know, I mean, over to you on that, because I'm not an expert on that particular operation, but it certainly was true, and maybe this is partly the point of your question, that actually one of the more bizarre aspects of Operation Mincemeat was that a naval officer, had indeed washed up on shore carrying secret documents extraordinarily in the Gulf of Cadiz, which is where the body was eventually released. And the Germans failed to realize that these were, they ought to have investigated that, because in fact, the documents were real and the accident had actually happened. And in a sort of weird way, sort of double bluff way, that might argue for saying, well, you can't do that again. It'll look obviously like a hoax. But actually, there was a perception that the German mindset was linear, and that thinking, okay, well, they'd never, from a German perspective, you'd look at that situation and say, they'd never dare do that. It must be real. It was an odd, very counterintuitive idea. Although I don't want to give too much away, there are still many theories about why and how Axis powers, and Hitler in particular, did choose to believe this situation. There could be many reasons that he didn't.
Yeah.
Maybe that's one of them. But anyway, the point is, it's an intriguing story, and you know, nothing even now is unequivocally established. For many years, the 40 odd years before the actual identity of the body was released, that it gave rise to a conspiracy theory that still rolls on about whose body they actually used, although it's unequivocally proven now that it was Glendower Michael, who was the Welsh tramp you were talking about in the introduction.
Yeah.
So it's a story that, you know, you go on speculating about, and it's absolutely fascinating watching it unfold, I think.
It is. And, you know, I thought I knew the story, but I'd forgotten all the twists and turns at the end. I kept, that can't be real. That can't be. That didn't really. And went and looked it up. Went, oh, they really had to do all of those things. So that second part is actually quite enjoyable. John, thank you so much for being our guest on Nightlife tonight. Good luck with the release of Operation Mincemeat.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
John Madden, film director, and he's the director of Operation Mincemeat, which is in Australian cinemas now.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.